Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome. It is really great to see everyone again today. Special shout out to Aryeh, who is rejoining us from doing, working outside, but Hashem said, no, go inside. Go inside, not because of COVID, go inside because of the rain. And so we get the benefit from that, have him rejoin us. So welcome back, Aryeh. And it is good to see everybody today. I want to do something. I don't think this is controversial, but you never know. What I want to do today is I want to understand, like, this guy Korach, like, he's really mad. Like, he needs, like, first of all, he's a good therapist. He needs to, like, take it easy. He needs, like, someone to tell him that, like, he should be okay. Like, why in the world is he so angry? And we made reference. There's a number of very, very, very well-known midrashim that deal with Korach. And, like, where do those midrashim come from even? Or you know, like, are they, like, just random statements? Or maybe there's some reference to something that's actually quite valuable and important that would assist us in providing insight into the entire Korach story. Someone told me a tremendous insight today, and that is, if I actually put my phone just on my computer in the corner, it actually positions very nicely. I used to have to, like, balance it somewhere on a stender and hold it up with, like, a Kleenex box, or, like, balance it on a printer, and now I don't have to do that anymore. So it's actually been life-changing as of this morning. So thank you to Danny Grunbaum, who offered that tremendous insight during our Chavrusa today. And why I didn't figure that out before, whatever. So the idea for today is the following premise. That if you really understand Korach, and you understand where he's coming from, I think you'll have greater insight into his case. But to understand where Korach comes from, you have to understand what the job his family had. In the beginning of Bamidbar, it lists all of the jobs of the Levim. And let's go back and see what was the job that Korach's family had. So let's go through this for a second. Yeah, Korach identifies himself as Korach ben. Well, you're all muted. So what does it say by Korach? He's the son of Bizar ben Gahas ben Levi. What was the job of Gahas in the Mishkan? So I'm going to do a very quick screen share. And I'm going to show you what the job of Gahas was in the Mishkan. Bam, right away we can see it. So we are told at the beginning of Bamidbar, Nasot Rosh B'nei Gahas, then Levi. What's his job? Okay, so there's the age. Zos Avodas B'nei Gahas. What's his job, right? What's the job? What's his responsibility as part of the Levim? So all of a sudden, the second that you'd think, okay, here's his job, stop, right? I want to just explain to you what this means. Here's the job. This is the responsibility. Let me tell you what the responsibility is. The most sacred object. Kodesh HaKodeshim doesn't mean he dealt with a Kodesh HaKodeshim. It means, and that's why it's translated here as such, he dealt with the holiest objects in the Mishkan. Now, here's where we need to understand, because what's the context is the following. When Aaron Ubanav, meaning the Kohanim, would come, bin Soa Hamachane, when they would decide to travel, what would the Kohanim do? Horidu es paroch es hamasach. They'd have to take down the Mishkan, right? Take down the screening curtain, and what would they do? The chisu va es arana edus, and they would cover the Aron. Now, who would cover the Aron? Answer, Kohanim. That's very important. Now, when they would travel and they'd have to disassemble the Mishkan, the family, the Levim, each had different responsibilities. The family of Gahas was responsible for holding and carrying the most sacred objects. And who took the objects apart and covered them and then handed over them to B'nai Gahas? The answer is the Kohanim. Let's continue reading. V'nastin v'lov kisui artachash u'farshu beged kilo techeles milmala v'samu badav. And what would they cover it with? They covered it with a special pure blue, otherwise known as tcheles, right? They would put tcheles, okay? By the way, very interesting. In this translation of Tachash is a dolphin. The better translation for Tachash is Tachash. To call it a dolphin, you know, in the middle of the desert, although the Tachash itself is where it come from, but I don't know, that's irrelevant for now. I can say one thing. It was no dolphin. This is not Orlando. And you can't, you know, I don't think Moshe Rabbeinu, to raise money for the Mishkan, offered, like, swim with the Tachash and we'll take pictures and you can throw fish to it. Okay? So, okay, that was a bad joke. I'm laughing. Anyways, B'samubadav. Then, again, but what else do they have to do? The Shulchan, Apanim, Yivrishu Beged Tcheles. Again, what did the table, the Lechem Apanim, they covered with? Eight Beged Tcheles. And they put the Karos and the Kapos and the Nikos, Akshos, Anesech, B'lechem Atamir, Alav, Yeh. And they would put on it all the bowls and the ladles and the jar. So they'd put all these vessels on the table. It's like you're cleaning up. You put all these things on the table. And you wrap everything in this tcheles, right? And then you put a reshula beged tolash shaniv resuza b'mirseh or tachash v'samu as badam. You put the poles in, and then you take v'lakhu beged tcheles v'chisum nuras. Then same idea. You're covering all the kalim. Now you're covering the menorah, and you're covering it all very carefully. And guess what? You're covering anything that deals with any of the vessels that related to it. But you're not done. You have to continue dealing with the various items that were in the Kodesh. Next, it's the Mizbach HaZahav. Same idea was going to be covered. And all the instruments that were used were going to be covered. Right? That's what you would do. And you have to clean it up. And everything else, you follow my point. And who did all this? The Chil Aron Uvanav Rasos as a Kodesh. Aaron and his sons were responsible for covering all of the Kodesh and all the various utensils in Chazar. Sorry, I didn't mean to say Chazarai. That's not what it is for the Kodesh, right? That's about my house is Chazarai, but the Kelim is not Chazarai. And what would they do? Pinsoa Machaneh. They would cover. And what did they do once it was covered? Achrechen Yavo Bnei Kahas. They would then send a text message to the Shalom Kahas and say, okay, everything is covered, your turn. And what would they do? They would come and they would carry all these things. The lo yigoz kodesh. They wouldn't touch the actual kodesh. Why? Because they were covered. They were engulfed. They were surrounded by various skins and coverings and blankets made out of the material. Ela masa b'nei kahas be'ohel mo'ed. The Torah gives us in about 10 psukim or so a very detailed account of everything that was covered. And what were to happen if they failed to do their job? Look at this. They're very careful, right? And the specific warning only given to Kahas, because only they really came in contact with the holy vessels. Al tachrisu sheves mishkos hakadosh mitoch halevim. Do not let the group of Kahat clan be cut off. You must do this so they can live, because they are going to approach these holy items, the most holy items. And if it is not done properly, Hashem warns Moshe, you need to teach the Aaron and his sons to do it properly, or else you will wipe out a third of the Levim. You'll wipe out their entire family. You must do this properly. Zosas, this is what you must do. Right? Please do it properly. Velo yavo liros kibalas akonish vametu. But let not the family of Kahas go inside and witness the dismantling of the sanctuary, lest they die. Because what happens if they see the Kohanim cover it? No good. They're not allowed to see these vessels being covered, nor when they carry the vessels are they allowed to actually hold on to the vessels themselves. They could only carry it by the way it's wrapped. So let's put yourself in the family of Kahat's shoes for a minute. And you're told, oh, you know what your job is? Shleper. What do I mean? You are holding the Holy of Holies, the Mizbeach, the Menorah, the Aron. And guess what? You don't get to see anything. Because I'm a Kohen. I'm not a Kohen. I'm a Kohen. Yafa's a Kohen. A Kohenet, right? And what is, right, your father, Eddie, right? So Eddie comes, Mr. Eddie Cohen comes, right? And what does he do? He gets to cover everything. He gets to cover the Holy of Holies. He gets to see the Holy of Holies. He gets to come close to it of all these holy items. He covers it up, and then he calls in. He sends a message, and who shows up? The movers show up, right? The schleppers show up. And they schlep the items from point A to point B. And these people, they're like, they don't get to see anything. For them, it's like it's a sofa under there. It doesn't look any different than menorah or like the Mizbeach. They can't see anything. They can barely even experience its closeness. And what do they do with it? Lift it up and schlep it, and you get to carry it. What do the Kohanim do? Stay back and look pretty. They don't want to hurt themselves. They don't want, they might know, they might bend their knees, hurt their back, oyvei, right? Instead, nothing. They call in the Bnei Kahas, they call in Korach and his family to do the dirty work, the schlepping work. And the reason why I'm highlighting this, my friends, is because now maybe you can appreciate why Korach has this beef. If you don't appreciate the job of Kahas, if you don't realize what the family is responsible to do, they have a beef and it looks like nepotism. But I want to show you that Kahas was given a very important responsibility. In many ways, it was the greatest responsibility of the family of Levim, because at least they came in contact with the holiest items in the Mishkan. The other families, the other branches of the Levim, they also schlepped. They also carried. Now it's true, they had wagons. They carried, you know, the poles, the curtains on the outside, then the crushing. They get to carry the mamish Klei Mishkan. While they have the most important work, they also have the most, quote-unquote, schleppers work. Because they don't get to have come in close contact. They don't get to have that excitement. They don't get to carry it. And they turn. And now maybe you'll understand a little bit into why. What do they do? What is their complaint? What is their complaint? Their complaint is, why are we schleppers? Right? Why are we looking at their complaint? Kol Eidah Kulam Kedoshim. Ubesocham Hashem. If we are all holy, why is it that we're schleppers? Now maybe you'll understand a little bit more into their complaint. The Kohanim, Aaron, how come Moshe, you made Aaron and his sons be able to be like, please take over, schlepper. They get to cover, they get to do the bubble wrap, right? Imagine Aaron, you moved recently, right? Moving is the biggest pain in the world. I moved 7 years ago, I'm still scarred from the experience, right? Moving is a huge job. Packing and this, but let me tell you, schlepping, it's a big job. It's not, you know, there aren't too many Jews that I know that have started a moving business. Do you know why? Jews are not very good at being schleppers. It's not what we do well, right? This is one of the reasons why COVID is so hard for Jews. Because all of a sudden, like, the whole world is, like, planting and building and, you know, making extensions and doing repairs and painting. And Jews are like, I can't call someone to do this and come to my house. Like, we don't do these things. Right, I have a friend of mine who's a Baal Tshuva, and his father actually taught him practical life skills. Like, he is able to practically build his own house. Why? Because he didn't grow religious, so his father trained him with, like, practical skills. Now, his father didn't teach him Torah, sent him to Jewish day school, so I guess that's not good. Right, but, you know, he can, like, do things. You know, imagine if a Jew, take a hammer, please. You know what a hammer is? It could hurt you. Like, it's dangerous. Be careful. Hold it this way. Jews, you even own a hammer? Never use a hammer, right? When a Jewish father goes to use a hammer, they make a big production of it. I'm going to use my tool, right? Right? Like, what are you doing? You know? It's like a whole. So all of a sudden, what's happening now is that the family of Kahas are schleppers. And what makes it even more difficult is that the Kohanim are not schleppers. And maybe there's a little bit of animosity and tension between those two groups. That makes sense to me. So now, Korach, from Kahas, and by the way, now you understand why is it that the Torah identifies Korach going all the way back to his father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather. I know if you tell me Korach is, because Korach's name is listed in the family of Kahas at the beginning of Parshas Nah and the beginning of Bamidbar. But maybe it is very possible that the Torah wants to identify us. Who is Korach? Let me tell you who he is. He's Ben Yitzhar. Great. But he's Kahas. Ben Levi. You need to know what exactly his role is in the larger Mishkan. And maybe that's why the Torah tells us. So now what happens? Why can't we get involved in the Kodesh? Why do we have to be a schlepper? And if this could also help us with another insight, how does Korach get punished? All of a sudden the ground opens up and they get swallowed. Where's that? So, at least one of the punishments, I realize this is not so simple, but one of the punishments, and who it happens to, in and they will be devoured. Like, isn't that a weird punishment? In fact, it's not the most popular punishment in the Torah. Popular punishments in the Torah are like, you know, fire from heaven, that's popular. Plagues, that's more popular. But like, you don't really see ground opening up, swallowing people. That doesn't really make the top ways that God punishes people in Tanakh, right? Not that popular. Why here? Here's what's really interesting. Look at the word that's used. The ground opens it up. Ubal'a'osam. And they get devoured. Well, that's really interesting, because guess what? Ubala esa kodesh v'mesu. That is exactly what happens to people of the family of Kahaz who go to the Kodesh and they handle it or they see it. Maybe what the Torah is trying to say is that there's actually a connection between the two. They're punished. They're punished by being devoured. Why are they punished by being devoured? Because it was that very sense of being devoured by the Kodesh they were so upset about. And here's the thing. Imagine if me, a regular Israelite, standing on the side, were to see the family of God. We'd be so jealous, because at least they get a special job. They get to carry the kelim of the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodashim, the sacred objects. What an honor. What a privilege. What a zchus. What a merit. I wish we could do those things. I'm an Israelite. I'm just a Joe Schmo. But Kahas, they don't realize that they're so privileged, that they're so honored. What they see is they want more. They want, you know, this egalitarian society. Let's all be equal. Let's all be the same. Let's all have the same jobs and responsibilities. A, that's not very practical. B, that's irrational. And C, it's a facade. It's not even real. Do you know why it's not real? It's not real because the Torah wants to tell us that their complaint is one of we want to one up, we want one better. What we have that's special is not good enough. They should have said, wow, we're so lucky, we are so honored to be able to carry the clan of Mishkan. That's an honor. You know, what is it? Let's do a quick math here. If one Shevet, one out of 12, is able to have that job, that's not even 10%, right? Was it 8%? 8% of the people get to do these things, and we're part of that 8%? Instead, they say, we want to be part of the whatever percent of the Kohanim are. It's hard to figure out, right? We wanted to be part of that tiny, teeny percent. I understand. You're not even focusing on that. You're focusing on the what you don't have. What about the other 92? They don't complain about anything. And it just goes to show you that their complaint to Moshe is not one that they want to have a greater relation with Kadosh Baruch Hu. We want to handle, because in theory, if they say we want to handle, you know, they don't, their complaint is one. They look at it, the glass is being empty, as opposed to of sincerity. This is the proof. The Torah wants to tell us there's a proof they're not being sincere, and here's the proof. And now, remember the famous midrash that many of you are familiar with. I think I referenced this yesterday as well. What's the midrash? A beged, last week's parsha. What about an article of clothing that is filled with tcheles? Does it need to have tzitzis on them? Who cares? Otherwise, a beged, which is filled with white, needs to have one string of tcheles, or maybe two. Right? Oh, what about a beggar that's full of tchelas? You shouldn't need any. Who cares about one string? That was their argument. Where did they get that from? I would like to argue. You know where the Medrash got it from? What was the color of the item that was used to cover the kelim? Beged tchelas. It was a tchelas garment. So what's Chazal saying? Now think of this insight. Where did they get this Tchilas garment from? I don't know for sure, but it appears, what did they do? They took these coverings that covered the Kalei HaMishkan, they ripped them off, Korach did, and waved it in motion and says, look at this garment, which is the barrier to my able to handle and to hold and to lift up the Kalim. This is a barrier. This is Kulo Tchilat. Why would it need one strain? You see what he's doing? It's opposed to looking at a real baguette which has one string of tchelet. You should say, wow, look at this one string of tchelet, right? This one unique, look at it, so significant, so special. Well, you make it all for the tchelet. If everything is tchelet, then nothing is special. The function of tchelet is to remind you, as the Gemara says in Menachos, right? The water in the sky and Kisya covered in God, right? Sometimes, when, you know, if you tie too many strings around your finger, you don't remember what each string is supposed to be worth. Olden days before, like, you know, messages and reminders on phones, people used to tie strings to their fingers to remind them of things, right? It's a reminder of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present in our life. And so maybe there's the two reasons. Where did Chazal get this from? I think it's trying to tell us. Ubalas HaKodesh Rometu. Tchilet we used to cover. And therefore we see from here that the real complaint that they had was simply a facade. It was a lie. It was all about ego. It was all about power. It was all about jealousy and absolutely no remnants in being honest and being sincere and wanting to have a closer relationship with Hashem Baruch Hu. It was simply about ego. It was simply about power. And I think that background, the background story of Korach and his family's responsibility, I think provides a tremendous insight into what exactly is happening in our parsha. Now, there was one more point, one more thing that was connected. And now you'll understand at the end, a very strange, where am I going? That is the wrong tab. Look at the language that's used, and maybe this will be the final. Okay, so Ktores, Lotia, no, it's after. There's a word that's used, Mishkan Korach. The word Mishkan Korach is used in relationship to this episode. Give me 1 second. Lotia ki Mishkan Korach. Give me 1 second, I will find it. There it is. Thank you. Oh, that's not what I was looking for. Here it is. Why is it that the Torah uses a very interesting identifying marker for a Korach? The Birulei Dalei Mor Halumi Saviv LeMishkan Korach. Why is it called Mishkan Korach? Why don't they call it, you know, like rubber houses of Korach, Machloke Korach, Anshe Korach, Adas Korach? Why Mishkan Korach, right? Why the gathering, right? Look at the language here, the abodes of Korach. I don't know what abode is, right? Humble abode, right? Why not use a machane or an eda, words that are more commonly used? The Torah is trying to tell us their beef is their job in the Mishkan. That's exactly why the Torah is referring to a Mishkan Korach. It's used again. Isn't that neat? I could do a search and a share screen, and you can see the words themselves instantaneously. That's pretty cool. Okay? So again, I think that's the... I think that's why specifically the word Mishkan is used as well, wants to highlight their fake facade of wanting to have closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they want to see themselves as grandiose. They don't appreciate what truly they have. And so, my friends, I think if this is a message, sometimes, you know, we have to appreciate what we have, be very sensitive and appreciate, not look what other people have, rather look at the blessings, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, because that's what we have. As opposed to being jealous, and here's the big difference. Not that you want more for yourself. Of course we should want more. There's no reason why you can't want more money or more children or more sin. Of course you want those things. But there's a very big difference of wanting more things and saying, I want what they have, right? I want what they have. That's what lo tachmud is. Lo tachmud eshes reyacha. Right? Lo tachmud, your friends, don't covet your friends' stuff, right? Including wife and car and kids. That's always the issue. I covet their success. I cover their situation in life. that thing which is extremely toxic and dangerous and will prevent you from enjoying the brachos, the blessings that God provides each and every one of us every single day. Have a terrific Tuesday, everybody. See you in 23 hours and 30 minutes. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Less than 23 hours tomorrow morning.
23 hours. Oh, right. That's true. I'll see you.
Have a good one.